Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Happy Friday. And glad you could make it. Too much... this is like an every night mantra. Too much bad news today. The report was released today about global warming. Oh... my God. We're going to try to get to that a little bit later tonight. I sometimes wonder what's the point in talking about it. It's way beyond anything that you and I can do. It really is. I mean, what are we going to do? Huh? What are we going to do? You tell me. What are we going to do about the situation that faces all of humanity? What are we going to do? Write our senators? Oh, yeah, that's always effective. Our senators have nothing to do with it anymore. Go parade around in front of ExxonMobil. Yeah, that'll work. We'll be arrested and thrown in jail. This is going to take leadership to deal with. I mean, the kind of leadership heretofore unknown on this planet. It's going to take leadership from just about every country on the planet that has any sort of an industrial base. Whether it is long established or emerging, doesn't make any difference at this point. It's going to take that kind of leadership, not just here, but all across Europe, all across Asia, all across the Middle East, South America, Central America, eventually Africa. Bad news today for my good friend Sam Cedar. He's been fired by Air America Radio. I know when they fired me about a week later, I climbed through a window in the building in downtown Manhattan and went on Sam's program and talked about it. He doesn't have to claw through a window here. Maybe I don't know. Maybe Sam will wind up on what?
Well, I wouldn't say technically fired because he is going to still be on Sunday.
Oh, come on. You know what I'm saying. Yeah, they've given him a Sunday show, which if I know Sam, he's going to tell him to jam up the body orifice nearest the ground. Fired because, I don't know why. I don't know, maybe because, like I did, he wanted to get paid. What he was due. I have no idea. I have no idea why Sam is gone. But he's got one more week. And his last day is Friday the 13th, huh? Next Friday. Wow. Air America had a chance to do something, and you can make the argument that in a sense we did. I was with them for 2 years, and again, eventually I'll tell the story about why I left, why I got fired. Just not ready to right now. But it turned out, Air America turned out to be just what everyone thought was the gold standard turned out to be tinny brass, and it still is. And they have, I'm not saying they don't have a couple of talented people left. They do. So it's not been the talent, the people on the air. It was the gross, incredible mismanagement, and they're doing it again. This Green family who bought Air America, not going to work. Trust me. Anyway, Sam Cedar, if you're listening tonight, been there, done that. Hang it. Call me. And how old is Sam's... I guess Sam's baby is not new anymore. How old is... what's her name? God, we sent her a gift.
She's about a year younger than Molly, so she's probably about a year and a half.
About
now,
a year and a half?
I think so, yeah.
Amy writes in... she lives in Portland, and she's happy we're going to be on in Portland starting Monday. But Amy says, today I read the front page of New York Times where it was reported that a senior official of Bush's education department who oversaw the administration of student loans sold shares in the student loan company of which he was a part owner for more than $100,000. Amy writes, are they all corrupt? Who is that ancient man looking looking for an honest man holding a lantern? I think it was Diogenes, wasn't it? Is that who it was, Kathy? Diogenes? I think it was.
When was that? Is that recently?
Amy goes on, then Randy Rhodes' website has a story about BCCI, lots of details, but the writer of that article, Lucy Commissar, connects the Bin Ladens, the Bushes, and wait for it, Saddam Hussein. They all used BCCI, which was the Bank of Commerce and Corruption International, to launder their money. Republican Orrin Hatch, Amy writes, is lying and smearing former U.S. Attorney Carol Lamb. Republican Dick Cheney still lying about Al-Qaeda. And Republican George Bush standing in front of troops at Fort Irwin for a speech and a photo op. Some things never seem to change. Amy writes, I pray this will be the final act of this era of greed and corruption. More likely, it is just deja vu all over again. Now, in addition to the revelations about the continued rape criminal molestation of almost every single institution of government by the Bush crime family appointees, thugs, hangers-on, criminals, killers. Now it's the Education Department. It's been the Environmental Department. Everything. Everything in government right now is corrupt. Everything should be burned to the ground and start over. Figuratively speaking, NSA. Figuratively speaking, CIA jackasses who monitor the program, but it should be burned to the ground and start over. It has been so corrupted starting right around 1981. The top aide to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, you know who she is, Monica Goodling, quit today. she's getting out of town. This is a woman that said she would take the fifth before she would tell the truth in front of any congressional committees. Truth, screw you. She's going to hide behind the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution that is denied to people that the Bush crime family and Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez scoop up all over the world and put in prison. They can't use the Fifth. But Monica Goodling can, she thinks. But that's not good enough because she's in the crosshairs. So she quit today, about 2 weeks after telling Congress to go screw itself, that she was not going to testify. She's not going to be the fall guy, is a part of what it is. Look for Monica Goodling to renew her passport and head for Uruguay. Or where did Bush buy all the land? Paraguay, Uruguay. I'm not sure. One of those places.
Well, crack me up in the hearings that they had last week with what was Gonzalez's little assistant, Samson, Kyle Sampson's name, was his name. The Republican kept getting into it with Patrick Leahy about Monica Goodling and just kept saying, well, it's just a terrible shame that she doesn't feel safe enough, that, you know, that Congress has become so hostile to her that she can't. Leahy kept making the point, which I thought was brilliant. She's not going to be tried for perjury if she doesn't lie.
Well, Leahy and Schumer and the rest have said that all they wanted this woman to do is sit down with them and tell the truth. But members of the Bush crime family cannot do that. They are congenitally unable to tell the truth about anything, starting with Cheney, Gonzalez, all of these people. Lying is as normal to them as their, Christianity. It's just utter, absolute perversion. Now, Goodling, you see, was the senior counsel to Gonzalez and was the liaison between the White House and the Justice Department. She's the one that carried the messages back and forth. She knows where the bodies are still standing. She knows the extent to which Karl Rove was involved in corrupting and polluting and destroying the United States Department of Justice. She knows how ineffectual and corrupt Gonzalez is. And she also knows, like the CIA found out, now the Justice Department found out, how much Dick Cheney can stick his filthy hands anywhere he wants to and destroy everything. Goodling knows. Her lawyers have said that appearing before Congress would be a perjury trap. Charles Schumer, who's leading an inquiry into the firings of the eight attorneys, said Goodling, quote, had no choice but to resign. He went on to say Attorney General Gonzalez, his hold on the department gets more tenuous every day. she will testify. Either that, or she will take the Japanese way out and kill herself. Yeah, I'm going, I'm going, I'm going, I'm going, I'm going. Yeah, I'm going, 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 I'm going. Don't need me this way, no. I can't exist. I'll surely miss your tender kiss.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret. You started this fire down
in my soul. Now can't you see it's burning out of control? 21 past the hour. In addition to Monica Goodling getting the hell out of Dodge, she's trying to put as much daylight between the, quote, Department of Justice, end quote, and herself as she possibly can. And like I said, maybe the only thing left open to her is suicide. That you know, in Eastern societies, business leaders and government officials who are filthily corrupt and get caught usually do that. Not a bad idea. In Minneapolis, St. Paul, the devil strikes again. Alberto Gonzalez, it says here from the Star Tribune, in a surprising move, three top lawyers in the Minnesota U.S. Attorney's Office resigned their management positions and will return to prosecuting cases. This happened yesterday. And the resignations of the first assistant U.S. attorney, who is second in command, and the chiefs of both the criminal and civil divisions of the office were communicated internally late yesterday afternoon, according to a source with direct knowledge of the events. The job changes followed a visit to the office by a representative from the Executive Office of the U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C. Senator Charles Schumer, who chairs the Senate Subcommittee on Administrative Oversight in the Courts, issued a harsh statement today after learning of the resignations. He said, quote, this is another example of the proud corps of U.S. attorneys being deprofessionalized. We wonder in how many other offices the same lack of confidence is taking its toll. Attorney General Gonzalez has a responsibility to see that the finest people are put in these positions, not simply cronies. Now, what's he referring to? Well, Minnesota's U.S. Attorney, Rachel Paulose. Paulose, P-A-U-L-O-S-E, took the job in March of 2006. No one has linked her to the controversy in Washington. And let me add, yet. One defense attorney knowledgeable about the Minnesota office said, quote, it's just absolutely extraordinary that these three top managers would voluntarily demote themselves. I mean, it's a cut in rank and it's a salary cut. And the article goes on. It's in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. This is like Bush saying after the election when the American people said we've had enough of the war, and Bush says, bite me, I'm going to send more troops. Go to hell. I'm going to extend people's tours of duty for the third, fourth, and fifth time. Go straight to hell. I'm taking anybody who's not nailed down, except my children, of course, my little precious twins. Gonzalez is doing the same thing. While they are under tremendous pressure, Gonzalez and his zombies, they continue to pressure decent attorneys to quit or resign. To resign. Absolutely no. They don't care. And why do they do it? Because they can. The same reason, your family pet, your dog, will sit down and lick himself every chance he gets. Why? Because he can. Oh, man, how much longer. I have to tell you, I've been critical of Pelosi a bit since she assumed the Speaker's job in the U.S. House. And there's lots of things to be critical about. where it concerns Pelosi's management style so far. But the attack on her by this filthy corporate media and its pig spokespeople since her trip to Syria is just an outrage. And it explains two things. First of all, why Americans are so utterly stupid and ill-informed, I should say, where it concerns these issues. And secondly, how absolutely miserable is media in this country, our media in this country. MediaMatters.org has been really leaning on this story. They pointed out several instances, and we've reported some of them on this program, how those in the media have uncritically reported conservative attacks on Pelosi and lies about her trip to Syria and the Middle East without noting a few key facts. For example, as we mentioned this past week, several Republican members of Congress have made similar trips without media criticism, and the delegation led by Speaker Pelosi is bipartisan. Pelosi's trip comes after several Republican lawmakers, including the three we told you about last night, went to the region on April 1st. In 2006, Republican Senator Arlen Specter also went to Syria. And there's more. I'm really, really angry. Substantive criticism of Pelosi is one thing. Right-wing, hysterical, Rush Limbaugh, CNN, MSNBC attacks is something else again.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Welcome to your life. There's no 26 before the hour. Back to the media onslaught against Nancy Pelosi. It just won't stop. Even on, just got an email on the news hour tonight with Jim Lehrer, a couple of right-wing thugs attacking her. The Washington Post reported, quote, foreign policy experts generally agree that Pelosi's dealings with Middle East leaders have not strayed far, if at all, from those typical for a congressional trip. Pelosi and aides have described the trip as little different than the visit paid to Syria the same week, led by Republican Frank Wolf of Virginia. Pelosi's goal was an effort to improve relations through contact. The bipartisan Iraq study group report suggested that the U.S. should engage Syria and Iran to bring stability to the region. The ISG stated, quote, given the ability of Iran and Syria to influence events within Iraq and their interest in avoiding chaos in Iraq, the United States should try to engage them constructively, end quote. The ISG further recommended that the U.S., quote, immediately launch a new diplomatic offensive to build an international consensus for stability in Iraq and the region with every country that has an interest in avoiding a chaotic Iraq, including Iran and Syria, end quote. The attack against Pelosi has just been unrelenting and based in garbage, based in garbage. Here is a congressional leader who has decided to make an effort. Now, I know that AIPAC scares the hell out of her. AIPAC scares the hell out of every politician in the United States. It does. They're terrified that they'll do something that will piss off the Israelis, and that AIPAC will be on them like white on rice. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Pelosi at least going to the Middle East and making an effort. Several news reports have noted that Pelosi and her delegation challenged Syria on its ties to, quote, militant groups, end quote, and urged Syria to control its border with Iraq. The New York Times reported that, according to delegation members, they pressed Syrian President Bashar al-Assad over Syria's support for militant groups and insisted that his government block militants seeking to cross into Iraq and join insurgents there. Similarly, an L.A. Times article noted that, quote, Pelosi emerged from the meeting with Assad, saying in a televised news conference that she had pressed him on Syria's support for the Islamic militant group Hamas and Lebanon's Hezbollah militia. Now, you don't see, you don't hear any of that. What you hear is lies that she misdelivered a message from the Israeli prime minister, which is absolutely a lie. But even the so-called respectable news organizations report it. I'm telling you, folks, they're against us, aren't they? ABC, CBS, NBC, especially NBC, CNN, Fox. Who else? Every news gathering, electronic news gathering organization in the country hates America and hates you. And how do you know it hates you? Because it continues, and me, it continues to destroy your mind with lies, half-truths, misleading statements, and garbage. It just never stops. Now, remember the news reports in the Associated Press and New York Post and an editorial in, of all places, Investors Business Daily, quoting Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney's criticism of Pelosi being seen in a headscarf and therefore sending the, quote, wrong signal to the people of Syria and to the people of the Middle East, end quote. What? Now, these same filthy organizations, New York Post, Investors Business Daily, and in this case, the Associated Press, they didn't note that Secretary of State Rice, Laura Bush, have both done the same thing when visiting the Middle East. Ah, these bastards. But Romney? Romney criticizing her? This from a guy who believes gold tablets were found in New England that explain how a couple, or was it one, of the lost tribes of Israel came to the United States. And the truth of all this was revealed to Joseph Smith by an angel named Moroni. Take the eye off of Moroni and what do you have? Oh, my God. On the April 5th edition of CNN's The Situation Room, CNN International's U.S. Affairs editor Jill Doherty repeated the baseless accusation from a Washington Post editorial that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had, in Doherty's words, quote, allegedly botched a message from Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert about Israel's willingness to begin peace talks with Syria. Doherty called the editorial a, quote, bombshell. An on-screen text during the report referred to a, quote, pratfall in Damascus, end quote, which was the headline of the Post editorial. Now, Doherty noted that Pelosi's staff disputed the accusations in the Post editorial, but she left out other statements Pelosi made at her April 4th press conference with al-Assad, which were reported in the Post news pages. And as Media Matters for America has documented, those statements undermine the Post editorial's assertion that Pelosi, quote, misrepresented Israel's position, end quote, by failing to communicate to Assad that Israel continues to demand that Syria cease its support for groups like Hamas and Hezbollah prior to negotiations. Pelosi didn't go to Assad and say, oh, guess what? You can continue to support these groups that Israel and the United States says you shouldn't support. But that's how it's being reported by this corrupt, filthy American media. That's how it's being reported. What Pelosi really said was what really happened. Pelosi told Assad that, quote, in order for Israel to engage in talks with Syria, the Syrian government must eliminate its links with extremist elements, including Hamas and Hezbollah, end quote. But you see, the right wing bastards that control media in this country don't report it that way. And then MediaMatters.org has a request. It says, for much of the past week, CNN and its White House correspondent, Suzanne Malvo, have offered a steady stream of inaccurate and incomplete coverage of Nancy Pelosi's trip to the Middle East and her meeting with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Since April 2nd, Malvo has wrongly and repeatedly claimed that Pelosi had no standing and was not acting in an official capacity. Malvo has attacked the trip as political theater and a political stunt and has consistently parroted the Bush administration's attacks on Pelosi for going to Syria while ignoring the fact that a Republican-led delegation met with Assad 4 days earlier. Most recently, Suzanne Malvo asked whether Pelosi's trip was a, quote, big wet kiss to President al-Assad, end quote. Jesus God! Other CNN personalities have joined in as well. Lou Dobbs. And don't ever kid yourself about Lou Dobbs, okay? Trust me. Lou Dobbs devoted an entire segment to, quote, Pelosi's bad trip, end quote. Anderson Cooper, April 3rd. Anderson Cooper featured a segment on Pelosi's trip titled, quote, Talking to Terrorists, end quote. Son of a bitch. Media Matters says, after several days of this, isn't it time to tell CNN enough's enough? Don't ever kid yourself about Lou Dobbs. He's the disappearing American middle class. Like, he could give a damn. Lou Dobbs is a racist, Klan descendant, politically speaking, who doesn't give a damn about the American middle class. He couldn't care less.
I think CNN is just terribly misogynistic. It just seems to me it always has been.
Well, oh, yeah? They just don't like chicks, huh?
I don't think they like the idea of having her out there. You know, they're not big fans of Hillary either.
Well, neither am I.
I don't know. Ever since Ted Turner and Jane Fonda, you know, left the building, I think maybe she was too scary for him.
You're probably right. Now, the French news agency has this report today, too, that sort of ties all this together. It says most Americans have little or no confidence in the information they receive from the military or the media about the situation in Iraq. That's according to a poll released yesterday by the Washington, D.C.-based Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. The poll found that 52% have little or no faith in the military's portrayal of the Iraq War. 60% feel the same way about press reports of the Iraq War. Now, in March of 2003, 85% said they had at least a fair amount of confidence in military information, and 81% were confident the press was giving an accurate picture of the war. Wow! Boy, did that flip-flop! The associate director of Pew Research said, quote, people are questioning whether they are getting good information about how things are going, and it's affecting the public's confidence in the government and the military, as well as the press, end quote. Oh, so true.
Get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. A.E. writes in, Mike, when speaking of Mitt Romney, never forget that he is an ordained Mormon priest and cannot separate church and state. Yeah, well, Mitt Romney has as much chance of being a president as I do. I find him very entertaining. Watching this turkey flip-flop all over the place where it can, I'm a hunter. Oh, well, I've never been in favor of abortion. Well, I don't really believe in gay rights. No, I don't think homosexuals ought to get married. No, I don't. On and on. Why don't you sit down and you know, the only thing about Mitt Romney that is consistent is his astonishing good looks. Oh, my God. Now, keep Mitt out there. I love it. I love it. Mitt Romney, a Mormon, thinking that the evangelical Christian fanatical right in this country, the base of the Republican Party, the owners of the Republican Party, are going to vote for a Mormon? Type in into a Google search. I don't know if it'll turn up. Mitt Romney, Mormon, or no, type in Angel Moroni. And what will pop up will be a series of absolute vile anti-Mormon hate pages put out there by evangelical Christians. Oh, it's just astonishing. Oh, my God. I'll tell you, when Christians go after Mormons, it's kind of like the Nazis going after the Jews, but without the death camps, of course. If the evangelical Christians, the Dominionists, I'm supposed to make that distinction, I'm sorry. If the Dominionist Christians get their way, however, the Mormons will be rounded up and gassed, as will you, Truth Seeker, because you listen to this program. And, of course, Kathy and I and Molly. You don't like me to say that, do you, Kathy? After the top of the hour, Joe Klein, who is certainly not my favorite liberal at all. As a matter of fact, Joe Klein is not a liberal. He writes for Time magazine. He has an essay that, it's quick. I'm going to read to you an edited version. But right now, let's talk with Sarge, who's calling in from Mississippi with an update.
Yeah, hey, thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Let me say, I'm just really grateful to everybody. It's remarkable. I've got well over 100 emails. I don't know if I should give a total, but the total is just really awesome. And that's just what I've gotten in PayPal's. I hadn't even got the first thing from snail mail, but there's been a lot of people asked for my address, and I've sent it back. It's just really remarkable, and I'm so honored, and I feel so humble. And I want everyone to know that what I'm going to do is at the site unreportednews.net, I will give a full accounting of every expenditure, so everyone to know how the money's spent. And if there's any left over, and everybody's okay with it, I would like to donate it to the Jackson County Community Services Coalition and help build some homes for people and get them.
I'm sure that the crew that responded to you, Sarge, would have no problem with you doing that. I'm glad there was response. I would hope there would be more. It's tough times out here for a lot of people, especially people who get involved in liberal talk radio. But I said the other night, if 1,000 people would send in $3, that would certainly get the ball rolling and bring an end to some of this nonsense.
I tell you what, it just, I got to say, I'm so overwhelmed and so honored. It really is. It's just such an honor these people have put on me, and I don't want to let them down. That's why I want to give a full accounting, whether they want it required or not. That doesn't matter. The thing is, I just want them to know that that I'm being honest with them, and I'm going to be. That's got to be.
Well, that's fine, Sarge.
Let me say something about Katrina real fast.
Sure.
I talked to John Zogby earlier on Jeff's show,
uh-huh.
And he said that he feels like Katrina is going to be an even bigger issue in the next 10 to 15 years than 9/11. And he said he was going to consider doing a question in one of his polls on it.
Well, that would be good. I know what my response would be. I've never seen anything like this in the United States of America in my lifetime.
I was thinking today, I was talking to King David McKenzie, and
uh-huh.
I was thinking it's just awesome to think that this far after a storm that we have we still have debris laying in places and that haven't been picked up, and that's not to mention the lives that the mobile the FEMA trailers and all the other crap that's floating out there. And yet there's people who there's been two or three right wingers come by the site, and they've made some smart remarks, but you know, we kind of laughed them off because hey, those people don't count anyway. But you know, they're idiots, so why pay attention to an idiot?
Well, Sarge, anybody who's responding to you is just proof of the old adage. I mean, you have really put your heart and soul out there for an awful lot of people all over the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I think folks know about it. I'm surprised that Time or Newsweek or Rolling Stone or L.A. Times or somebody hasn't done an article on you. But I tell you what,
Let me tell you something.
I think he's from Mississippi or Louisiana. Brother Dave Gardner, years ago, he said, "Cast your bread upon the waters, and you get back soggy bread." But anyway, folks. Well, stick around for the second show. We have an entirely new. I'm just kidding.
But one thing I do want to thank everybody, and of course, I could use more, I'm sure. But like I said, anything that isn't used, I will make sure that it goes to Jim Yancey, and it will help people.
Super.
I know Jim will, because I you know, I feel bad because I know there's too many people worse shaped than I am.
Well, we can all say that, no matter how bad it gets for us. Thanks, Sarge. Take care. Stay in touch.
Brother.
If you want to get in touch with him, sarge@unreportednews.net. And don't write the word at. It's that little symbol. sarge@unreportednews.net. Stick around. Joe Klein's piece when we come back, and then your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the NovaM Radio Network. The hour, the Angel Moroni. Jan in, I believe this is this Jan from, yeah, New York, writes in the subject line, Kathy is correct. She writes, "Mike, I don't watch those shows on TV. That is one reason I listen to you. What I think is that they fear Pelosi looking and being thought of as presidential. As I said before, the French spoke of her and reported about her with great respect. She comported herself with dignity, something missing in our leaders most of the last 26 years. Jan in New York City. P.S. When did Pelosi become a messenger for Israel?" Well, no, that's a little strong. It really is. I mean, anybody that can carry a message back and forth between the Israelis and the Syrians or so many permutations and combinations of nation states in the Middle East, more power to them. Really? Right? All right. Joe Klein, if you remember, he's the one that wrote Primary Colors, the Romana Clef of the first Clinton campaign. He wrote it anonymously. Remember that? Several years back? By anonymous. And then he just couldn't stand it anymore and revealed that he was the writer. Klein is, I think by any definition, is an East Coast elitist. He's part of the Washington, New York City axis of writers who just look at the rest of the country as kind of, like the rest of us, are termites eating away at the foundation of what really and truly belongs to them. That's why when I read this today, it kind of... I never thought I'd be agreeing with Joe Klein on anything, but here it is, an administration's epic collapse. Now, I've taken a couple of paragraphs out just for time constraints here. Joe Klein writes, the first 3 months of the new Democratic Congress have been neither terrible nor transcendent. A Pew poll had it about right. A substantial majority of the public remains happy the Democrats won in 2006, but neither Nancy Pelosi nor Harry Reid has dominated the public consciousness as Newt Gingrich did when the Republicans came to power in 1995. There is a reason for that. A much bigger story is unfolding. The epic collapse of the Bush administration. The three big Bush stories of 2007, which were the decision to surge in Iraq, the scandalous treatment of wounded veterans at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and the firing of eight U.S. attorneys for tawdry political reasons, those three big stories precisely illuminate the three qualities that make this administration one of the worst in American history. Arrogance, the surge, incompetence, Walter Reed, and cynicism, the U.S. attorneys. Iraq comes first, as always. From the start, it has been obvious that personal motives have skewed the president's judgment about the war. Saddam tried to kill his dad. His dad didn't try hard enough to kill Saddam. There was payback to be had, but never was Bush's adolescent petulance more obvious than in his decision to ignore the Baker-Hamilton report and move in the exact opposite direction, adding troops and employing counterinsurgency tactics inappropriate to the situation on the ground. Quote, there was no way he was going to accept the Baker-Hamilton findings once the press began to portray the report as daddy's friends coming to the rescue, end quote, a member of the Baker-Hamilton Commission told me. As with Bush's invasion of Iraq, the decision to surge was made unilaterally without adequate respect for history or military doctrine. Iraq was invaded with insufficient troops and planning. The surge was attempted with too few troops. A purposely misleading timeline, and most important, the absence of a reliable Iraqi government. General David Petraeus has repeatedly said, quote, a military solution to Iraq is not possible, end quote. Translation, this thing fails unless there is a political deal among the Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds. There is no such deal on the horizon, largely because of the president's aversion to talking to people he doesn't like. And while some Baghdad neighborhoods may be more peaceful, temporarily, as a result of the increased U.S. military presence, the story 2 years from now is likely to resemble the recent headlines from Tal Afar. Dueling Sunni and Shiite massacres have destroyed order in a city famously pacified by counterinsurgency tactics in 2005. Bush's indifference to reality in Iraq is not an isolated case. It is the modus operandi of his administration. The indifference of his Environmental Protection Agency to the dangers of carbon dioxide emissions was rejected by the Supreme Court this week. Also this week, the president accused Democrats of being, quote, more interested in fighting political battles in Washington than providing our troops what they need, end quote. Such demagoguery is particularly outrageous given this administration's inability to provide our troops, quote, what they need, end quote, at the nation's premier hospital for veterans. The mold and decrepitude at Walter Reed are likely to be only the beginning of the tragedy, the latest example of incompetence in this administration. Paul Rykoff of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America said, quote, this is yet another aspect of war planning that wasn't done properly. The entire VA hospital system is unprepared for the casualties of Iraq, especially the psychiatric casualties. A lot of vets are saying, quote, this is our Katrina moment, end quote. And they're right. This administration governs badly because it doesn't care, end quote. When Bush came to office, installed by the Supreme Court after receiving fewer votes than Al Gore, I speculated that the new president would have to govern in a bipartisan manner to be successful. He chose the opposite path, and his hyper-partisanship has proved to be a travesty of governance and a comprehensive failure. I've tried to be respectful of the man in the office, but the three defining sins of the Bush administration, arrogance, incompetence, cynicism, are congenital. They're part of his personality. They're not likely to change. and it is increasingly difficult to imagine yet another 2 years of slow bleed with a leader so clearly unfit to lead. Now, if you want to get a copy of this to give to your right-wing friends, go to time.com and look for Joe Klein's screed. On top of all of that, newly released documents confirm that a Pentagon unit knowingly cooked up intelligence claiming a direct link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda in order to win support for that strike against that sad, bleeding country. A report, we mentioned this last night, a report prepared by the Defense Department's Inspector General for Carl Levin, the Democratic chairman of the Armed Services Committee, explicitly shows how former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith, who I believe is one of the Project for a New American Century signees, Feith used his Defense Department position to cook intelligence, claiming a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein's regime. The Inspector General's report, titled Review of the Pre-Iraq War Activities of the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, focuses specifically on Feith's intelligence gathering operations in the months prior to the invasion. An executive summary of the report was declassified in February, and the full report was declassified and released Thursday, yesterday. And it goes on. I mean, it's astonishing stuff. You can find this at truthout.org. Douglas Feith is, by his own definition, an American Zionist, another one of those people who decided that the possible, although this is crazy thinking, the possible protection of Israel was more important than lawful conduct by the highest officers of the government of the United States. And as I've said before, anybody in this country or the Middle East who doesn't think Israel is perfectly capable of not only defending itself, but of waging war on simultaneous fronts against probably every Arab country in the Middle East is a damn fool. It's the only country in the Middle East that is, and one of only eight on the planet, that is chock-a-block with nuclear warheads. And then you have a termite like Douglas Feith who decides to construct a war for his own personal philosophical reasons. Unbelievable. If W goes home, when W goes home, so glad, the worst president we ever had, he's a damn shame, a big liar, he plays like he's Jesus. Happy trails to you, until
you got a lot of problems, but I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
Just sing a song, yeah. Okay, George. Got an email here. I don't know who sent it to me because I printed it wrong. If you listen to NPR today, they're giving us 10 years before the catastrophic effects of climate change really set in. 10 years. At an NID meeting, the prediction is the Sierra Nevada snowpack will irrevocably start shrinking as of 2013. That's, 6 years? I think it's time to wake up from our sleep. It's time to wake up. This isn't about you or me. If you can imagine it, if even for a moment, it's about the extinction of the entire planet. As Carl Sagan said, the tragedy of the human species was that it evolved the capacity of foresight but refused to use it. And what this is about is the scientists who've issued what can only be described as a grim report on global warming and the species extinction that this is going to include, but also the hundreds of millions of people who are going to die because they will not be able to handle the floods or the droughts or the severe weather or the tsunamis, which may or may not come as a result of climate change, but they have no infrastructure. There's no way. This was the meeting in Brussels, Belgium. 29,000 data sets, much of it collected in the last 5 years, were examined. Martin Perry, who conducted the negotiations on this report, told reporters, quote, "For the first time, we are not just arm-waving with models. Here's the proof." Interestingly, there were three or four countries that that tried to change the wording so as not to make it sound so dire. The United States, China, and Saudi Arabia.
Boy, that's a surprise.
Those three countries raised objections to the phrasing in this report, trying to tone down the certainty of some of the more dire projections. The report said, for example, up to 30% of species on Earth face an increased risk of vanishing if global temperatures rise 3.6 degrees, I believe that's Fahrenheit, above the average of the 80s and 90s. Areas in drought will become even more dry. The prediction is the southwestern United States, that's Phoenix, will become more dry than it was during the Dust Bowl periods in Oklahoma, in the Midwest. Areas in drought will become even more dry, adding to the risks of hunger and disease. The world will face heightened threats of flooding, yada, yada, yada. The Greenpeace Environmental Group, and I think Bill Crowley on the Air American News said this, quoted this, the Greenpeace Environmentalist Group said, quote, "This is a glimpse into an apocalyptic future," end quote. Without action to curb carbon emissions, man's livable habitat will shrink starkly, said one of the scientists. Don't be in a poor country. Don't be in a hot country. Don't live in Hurricane Alley. Watch out for being on the coast or in the Arctic. And it's a bad idea to be on high mountains with glaciers melting. The report also says we can fix this. It's trillions of dollars. But the money is trivial. The report is lengthy. You can get it if you're interested. It's out there on the internet. It's just I haven't read the report, but I've read a couple of articles about the report, and it really did today bring tears to my eyes. I mean, I got verklempt. I was upstairs reading, and I came down, and Kathy was doing Easter eggs with Molly, dyeing Easter eggs. Kathy did the dyeing, and Molly was putting little stickers on them and taking her little magic crayons and making designs on the eggs. She's all into this Easter Bunny stuff. She really is. She's been to one egg grab, candy egg grab this year. They call them an Easter egg hunt. They get 8 million children surrounding this field that has been salted with all of these. And Molly doesn't eat candy. I don't think she's ever had a piece of candy in her life, has she? She had a gummy bear one time.
Oh, she's had a couple of pieces of candy.
What? When?
At Halloween or at the zoo.
I had no idea.
Strangers with candy, literally. People will stop and say, "Can I give your daughter a piece of candy?"
Yeah, and we always say no. So she doesn't get the candy thing. She brought home all of her little cellophane-wrapped candy eggs from this Easter egg grab in Decatur, Georgia. She brought them all home, and she plays with it. It hasn't occurred to her to open them. It's so cool. She thinks they're toys. She doesn't know that there's enough sugar in one of those things to make her run up the walls and across the ceiling for days. Why did I start talking about Easter eggs?
Beats dead Chinese babies.
There was a reason. Oh, you were doing Easter eggs, and I came down today, downstairs, with tears in my eyes, and as Kathy does, oh no, now what? Genius, we can welcome. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye. Goodbye.
what happens in those forests, because of lousy federal policy, is they grow to be, they're not harvested.
Yeah, they're not harvested.
You know, that man has done more research on global warming than any president in American history.
Yeah, it's true. He certainly has. He's just a credit to his race, too, isn't he? He certainly is. So anyway, I am reading about this report today, and I come downstairs where Kathy is doing Easter eggs, showing Molly how to do Easter eggs. And I was just overwhelmed because I caught the part of the report about how critical this is and how much time is left. And, I'm looking at a kid not yet three standing up at the counter in the kitchen taking eggs out of little plastic cups filled with dye and just marveling at what she's seeing. They go in white, mommy, and look, red, yeah, you know, just marveling. And I couldn't help it. I just got tears in my eyes. I just wonder, will Molly do that when she's, 30 years old, 35 years old with her child? It's just, it's really hitting home. And there are still people out there who are just ripping Al Gore a new body orifice because he had the temerity to produce, the film, or write the book, or do the documentary, or talk before Congress. I just wonder if we have the leadership, not just here, because this is not a just here problem. If we have the leadership to get control of this, I'm afraid the answer I come up with. I'm just terrified to put it into words. Just utterly, absolutely terrified to put it into words. And I've got grandchildren who are older than Molly. You know, like you do. Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? You know, what the hell? This is just, this is not science fiction stuff. This is not a treatment for some sort of a movie. It's the world's leading climatologists, scientists. Thousands upon thousands of reports, ice core samples that go back, what are some of the core samples? Hundreds of thousands of years, a couple of million years to find out what was going on in the atmosphere then. And still, you have the pig man and these right-wing Republicans continuing to play taps by telling their audience, come on, yeah. I wonder if we can do it. You can't do it, and I can't do it. And no, buying a Prius and getting rid of your Chevy is just not going to. It's not going to do it. It's not going to do it. I drive a pickup truck, and I could crash the son of a bitch into a brick wall tomorrow, and it wouldn't matter. What it's going to take is global leadership, global cooperation. From business, government, all every level of society, education that you can think of. Because what's at stake here is survival. That's all. I don't see any benefit. And you and I talking about it, that's one of the reasons I never bring this up on the air. I just don't. All the Earth Days, oh, I'll make note of it, usually in some cynical, snarky way. But there's nothing I can do about it, and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, forming a human chain from coast to coast and holding lighted candles and chanting Om is not going to do it. It just isn't. It can be done. I'm not a nihilist on this. I'm not, you know, all gloom and doom. Of course it can be done. It can be done. But as the report said, it's going to require almost immediate action. We have a window here, if that's the right term, of half a decade, maybe. And it's going to require trillions of dollars to make this happen. And not just the money, but a complete rethinking of how we relate to the earth, all of us. Whether we're Maasai warriors in the darkest Africa, or somebody walking the streets in Moscow, or a right-winger in Wichita, Kansas, it doesn't matter. Everybody's going to have to rethink. But no, we're too busy fighting each other and murdering and slaughtering and having our wars, and all the wars, for the most part, are over oil. I don't know. Some point tonight, Kathy, will you please pull the Busta Rhymes thing again? I every once in a while, not right now, but every once in a while I have to hear that in order to refocus. Lake Superior is warming faster than the surrounding climate. This has been going on since the late 70s due to reduced ice cover in the winter. Assistant professor University of Minnesota in Duluth. Assistant professor there at the University's Large Lakes Observatory and Department of Physics told the Star Tribune newspaper, quote, "It's a remarkably rapid rate of change in the lake." The study is based on data collected by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration buoys on the lake and on 102 years' worth of daily temperature readings at a hydroelectric plant near Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. But Rush Limbaugh will tell you that's right-wing or left-wing liberal bull snot. Oh, my God. Also, that was in the Detroit News. Detroit Free Press, researchers say global warming is already changing Michigan. Key parts of that state's economy, from the cherry industry to recreational fishing and skiing, are already... Oh, well, you can read it if you want to. It's just, I don't know. I honestly don't know what to do, where it concerns using this program to discuss the issue, because it's really kind of pointless. It really is. And again, I don't mean to sound negative or a nihilist. You know, I do my crying at home in private, except when I come downstairs and see my 2.5-year-old coloring Easter eggs. And I just, you know, tend to lose it then. I really do. I don't let Molly see me lose it. But And millions on ABC News tonight. Charles Gibson had a little, you know, just a little package. What, maybe 2.5 minutes about this, about the report, and how it's going to affect the poorest of the poor in this country. People who live in coastal areas. One big example, Bangladesh. You know, the several millions of people wiped out. But it's going to go on and on and on. The Indus River Valley, the Ganges, the you know, all of these huge rivers depend on, in a lot of instances, glacial melting and refreezing, and melting and snow and water and melting and refreezing. And if there is no glacial level in the Himalayas, okay. So anyway. And if you're around the age of 50 or less, and maybe older than that, maybe people in their 70s, you're going to see this happen. If you're 25 and listening to this program, if I were 25 right now, I would pretty much be panicked. I don't know if a 25-year-old getting a 40-year mortgage on a house or planning a future to maybe have kids or what have you. Whoo! Really? Can you do that? You still do that? And understand the science behind all this and understand what we're facing? Can you? Okay, that's cool. That's great. Hope springs eternal in the human breast, right? But this is going to take more than hope. It's going to take some real concentrated efforts. Oh, well, whatever. Either we will or we won't. Either we do or we don't survive, right? Huh? Okay, let's do some phone calls. You want to do some phone calls? We got a break coming, but let's go to Ash, who's calling from Phoenix. Ash, welcome to the program. Hello, Ash.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One, the way you call Bush, the Bush crime family, I love it. It fits them perfectly. Too bad I don't want to live in corporate America.
Yeah.
But another thing, if they say that Iraq is so safe, how come Bush doesn't go down there himself?
Because he's a liar and a coward. He's a liar about Iraq, and he's a coward about everything else.
Yeah, exactly. And one more comment. I'm from Iran myself. I called actually yesterday. And I just wanted to let the viewers know. I mean, majority of Americans and Europeans, unfortunately, when they think of Iran, they think of a desert, middle of nowhere. Only 20-25% of Iran is desert. The rest is mountains, beaches, you know, jungles.
I've seen pictures. You've got some gorgeous mountains there form the boundary with Afghanistan, I believe.
Yeah.
Incredible. Hey, Ash.
Yes, sir.
There's the music. We got to go. Thanks for checking in, pal.
I'll be at your birthday party.
Oh, good, good. Look forward to meeting you. Take care.
Perhaps this final act was meant to clinch a lifetime's argument. Nothing comes from violence. Nothing ever could. For all I was born beneath an angry star. Lest we forget how fresh, how we are.
The globe is warming.
there is a politician out there who has some answers. It's part of his campaign for the presidency. No, I'm not talking about Al Gore because he's not running, but John Edwards. Go to johnedwards.com. When you get there, click at the top of the page on the Issues button, Issues, and read what John Edwards has. Edwards, unlike any of the other Democratic candidates so far, has put out position papers. I mean, he really is talking about issues, and nobody's paying attention. Where it concerns national health care, he's got an answer. Where it concerns global warming, he's got an answer. Where it concerns the environment or restoring America's moral leadership, he's got an answer. It's not just rhetoric like Obama and Hillary. It is not. It's real stuff. Oh, my God, I sound like I support John Edwards. Maybe I do. I don't know yet. But go check it out, would you please? JohnEdwards.com. Click on the issues, as the pigman would say, the issues icon, and read what he says about anything, but about this horrific extinction of the species that we may be facing. Read about what he says. Read it. Just do that, okay? This one's free. It doesn't cost anything. There's no pitch for subscribe to Nova M or help anybody out. It's just go read it. JohnEdwards.com. Issues. Back to your calls. Sandra is calling from Berkeley, California. Sandra, welcome to the program. Hey, Sandra.
Oh, hey. Sorry, didn't know it was my turn.
Oh, well, here you are.
Hey, you're great. Keep it up. I love you. You know, it's just for 6 years, it's really funny. I've been saying a lot of things that you're saying, and I keep saying, oh, the Bush crime family is doing this, or they're doing that, and people say, oh, no, you're imagining things. But people don't tell me that anymore.
But, really?
Yeah. But one thing that I wanted to say was I've been reading the latest book about Blackwater that just came out in paperback. Have you read that book?
I have not.
It's a terrifying book, if you want to be even more scared. Because basically, Joseph Schmidt, who was in charge of all the contracting stuff, gave all the contracts to Blackwater, and they're all crazy, you know, fundamentalist religious fanatics.
Right.
And the company was started by this guy, Prince, from Michigan, who's another crazy religious fanatic.
Right.
And these 200,000 soldiers that they have, which I don't know if you remember, but remember when George Bush added some of the mercenaries to the army a few months ago?
Yes.
Okay. Who are these people loyal to? We have 200,000 people that are an army that's run by a bunch of Christian fanatics that are loyal to them, not to the army, not to Americans. And I want to say one other thing real quick, and then I'll go off. And that is, for 6 years, I've been saying that, what does George Bush know that we don't know? Unlike other people in this country, I don't think he's stupider than us. I think he has better information. And I've been saying that it feels like they're just squeezing this country dry like a lemon or an orange, taking everything out, the schools, the money, the everything, every department. Like you said, they have their hand in everything.
Oh, that's incredible.
I've been watching them change everything. Because they want to, they're going to dump this country like an empty husk. And that's what people need to wake up. And what are we going to do about it? That's why he's moving to South America. Because people are going to want to come after him. But there's not going to be an army here. We're not going to have any gas. We're not going to have any money. We're not going to have alternative energy. So they're just going to leave us all here to die.
Oh, my God.
And this is what I've been trying to say for 6 years, and people don't want to hear it. But I think the sooner we face up to the reality, the sooner we can figure out what we're going to do about it.
Well, I certainly agree with not being a passive victim. I certainly agree with being, what's the term everybody uses, proactive, where it concerns my own damn survival and the survival of, in this instance, the human species, or
mm-hmm.
what you're talking about, the United States of America. But
mm-hmm.
Being proactive, you know, having your heart and your mind in the right place is one thing, and God bless the people who do that. But like I said, this is not something that, Sandra, that you and I can do. And I know the answer, the quick answer to that, well, multiply you and I by 50 million or 100 million or a billion, and maybe we can get something done. And I certainly agree with that. But it always, always, always takes leadership. And what I'm terrified of is not the prospect so much of global warming, but whether or not there is enough leadership on the planet, people who are in positions of power. I have no power. You have no power. People who are in positions of power to actually take this seriously and say, oh, my God, we've got to do something starting now. And,
well,
and that's the part that freaks me out.
And the human race, you know, we always wait till the very last minute. It's our pattern, you know.
But that's not going to. But that's not going to work this time. This is the Earth. This is that has been disturbed. So I mean, we've already passed the last moment, or are rapidly approaching it. You know, they keep telling us the window is going to shut, and then it's just, you know, fold up and say your prayers or whatever you do and get ready for the end. I don't want to do that.
I'm not going to go quietly into the good night.
No,
and I think that if every single person that we know and we talk to starts their own radio show, I'm starting one. And I think we all need to get on the air, and we all need to say, like you say, people wake up. I think that our generation, because I was born, I'm 56, and our generation, it was like a rehearsal in the 60s to say we thought we were going to save the world. It was a rehearsal for now. And I think we all have to either do it or die trying, and I think that's where we are right now.
Well,
and my daughter thinks that, who's 23, thinks that, you know, maybe we don't deserve to live. You know, the human race ain't so great. You know,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
sure.
We sure mess things up here. But I had a couple quick things to say too. I called George Bush the Great Divider, so I just thought you might love that one.
I do.
He divides everything into smaller and smaller people from people. People from animals, people from trees, you know, country from country. He divides everything into such small categories because he's a sociopath.
He is.
And what I say about him, and I've been saying this for 6 years and people thought I was crazy. Now people realize it. And I call the White House every day and I say they need to send the guys with the white coats.
Hey, Joanne, or Sandra, guess
wait,
what?
One more thing. Oh, one more thing is, can we have a smart sociopath if we're going to have one, please?
Okay, I got to go. Thanks, Sandra. We'll be back in a minute, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour on the Molloy program here on the Nova M Radio Network. Let's go back to your phone calls. Who we got here? Paul is calling from Mount Pocono, PA. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike. Good evening and a happy spring to you and the family.
Thank you very much. Back at you.
Hey, let me ask you a real quick question. When you came downstairs today and saw that daughter of yours playing with those Easter eggs, did anything else in this bizarre world matter to you at the moment?
No, actually it didn't. Molly is like all parents. I look at my 3-year-old almost as just a gift from the universe. So
No, nothing
else matters.
Yep, you're right. Real quick, I'm up here in the land of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, where the hatred of anybody of foreign extraction has begun. And in this area now, if you're of any sort of dark skin, dark hair, dark complexion from elsewhere, you have to show a green card to be able to buy a hamburger at McDonald's. It's gotten that bad. But what's crazy is locally in our county here, we have a county prison, and we have a chaplain who is Canadian. Man is highly qualified to be the chaplain of this prison. He works with the prisoners. He gets them placed in churches and homes and jobs once they leave prison. We have the lowest recidivism rate in the state in our prison. It's very well managed, etc. Turns out this week that he's got trouble with his green card where the paperwork hasn't gone through properly with the State Department or whatever. And technically at the moment, he's an illegal working for the county. For our county commissioners, the gutless Republican county commissioners, they fired him this week. They wanted him deported back to Canada because they can't have an illegal working for the county. This man's been working for this county 7 or 8 years now. He's a marvelous guy, and these gutless county commissioners here can't have an illegal working for them. It makes you cry.
Oh, it does.
It's just, you know, of all the crazy things we got going on in this world, something like this pops up, and you just say, what is going on here that a person can't say, yeah, he's technically illegal. He works for the county. We can call our senator. We can call our congressman. We can work with the State Department and get this straightened out. They don't have the guts to do what's right. It's amazing. I just shake my head at this whole mess.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, I appreciate it. And, in fact, the last time I tried calling you, it was just about the same time you and Molly and Kathy decided to take a 3-month cruise in the Caribbean there last year. So welcome back. And I became a Nova M subscriber so I can hear you on the replays the next day. So
thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much for your efforts. You're a godsend to our country.
Well, that's very kind. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it. You take care. That 3-month cruise, Kathy, that was from the house to the Georgia Department of Labor offices to go to those damn meetings so we would get our $300 a week checks.
I just keep hearing this. Now sit right back and we'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
Right.
A 3-month firing.
Paul is absolutely right about the I've never seen anti-immigrant fever. We played for you the audio, and it's last night. It's all over the internet, and it made the ABC Nightly News tonight. The confrontation between Jerry Rivers, Geraldo Rivera, and this freak monster on Fox, Bill O'Reilly, screaming back and forth about this issue. That's what they were screaming about. And the immigrant, it reminds me of that movie we saw, Kathy, The Gangs of New York, where the native-born, and I believe everybody in that movie was Irish, weren't they? Or at least from the UK. And the native-born gang members would take on the immigrants. And these were all white. This was not like different races or different religions or different ethnic groups. And the murder and mayhem that was described in the Gangs of New York, Scorsese's film, was astonishing to me. I had no idea of that part of our history, the Shanghaiing, so to speak, of Irish immigrants into the Northern Army to go fight in the South against the Southerners, and that whole section. Now I don't know if that was a true depiction of history in that time or not. It was a hell of a movie, that's for sure. It was a great film. But the anti-immigrant fever or fervor, either word applies, that is going on in this country right now is just astonishing. And I think its roots are in the what corporate America, what global corporations have done to American workers. I mentioned the other night, there was a time when I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, one person working in the family, usually the husband, working in the auto industry in the feeder factories, whether it was making transmissions or batteries or whatever in Toledo. That's all we were. We were a feeder city for Detroit at the time. But one person working could support an entire family. It is not immigrants with the correct papers or not the correct papers that have screwed everything for the American worker. No. It is corporate America. And corporate America, these massive transglobal now corporations and the super wealthy sit back on their well-padded asses and laugh at the way, once again, working class or middle class, however you define us now, people are going for each other's throats. This is the way it works, for Christ's sake. Don't you remember the classes you took in school, the classes in Marxism, whether you agree with Marxism or not? This is the way it works. The ruling class sets against each other those people who comprise the workers or those strivers that are trying to get out of that and become the middle class or the managerial class. No, 1,000 times no. Murder each other, you worker bees. So here we are again. Housing prices are not deteriorating because of immigrants. Hourly wages are not deteriorating because of immigrants. Salaries and layoffs and none of that is going to hell because of immigrants. The CEO of Ford Motor Company raking in $28 million for 4 months' work. That is why things are screwed up. Not because somebody with brown skin who doesn't speak English very well comes out to your house to set up a bed you bought at Sears, or comes over with the guy who you contracted with to take down a tree off your property so it doesn't hit your house. Both of those situations Kathy and I have dealt with in the past 2 weeks. The workers that come out, we know they're not, we can guess, we don't know. That they're not, they don't have the right green card or whatever the hell it's called now. They may have identification, but for the most part, if it's here in north central Georgia, it's forged, it's fake, it's not real. But these are not the people who have caused this. And every time I see this goddamn Lou Dobbs with his phony populism, I could just scream and rip my hair out. And it is phony. Lou Dobbs is no more of a populist than George Bush is. He's an elitist. But he has found the perfect issue. Immigrants! The dirty, filthy bastards! And Lou Dobbs, having been a whore for the business establishment in this country for years on his television program, he knows where the problem is. He knows it was NAFTA and GATT and the World Bank and all this other crap. He knows. That's why I hate his guts. I hate anyone who is a liar, a deceiver, a hypocrite, a sneak. That smarmy grin into the television camera every night, I could just rip my eyeballs out, or his. So that's where we are. And Paul is absolutely right. This is insanity. But this is what we're going to do. This is one of the things we're going to do. Plus, try to murder each other in the Middle East as the planet gets to the point where it's boiling. We're going to be worrying about immigrants coming across an imaginary boundary. Oh, my God!
Then they expect you to pick a career when you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. keep you doped with relief.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
It's 21 past the hour. Back to your telephone calls. Who we got here? Bob the Poet is calling from Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. How are you?
My stomach's all turned up the way you carry on here on this program.
I know.
You know, you start out the night talking about the U.S. attorneys.
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about history. Being a poet, I'm very, very aware of language.
Right.
And the devolution of law in the United States interests me, from the George who wouldn't be king to the George who wants to be king.
Uh-huh.
The arrogance of this administration and the Attorney General. Now, during George Washington's time and for a long time afterwards, we had a Justice of the Peace. And the law officers were called peace officers.
Uh-huh.
And they were to keep the peace and to intervene in a dispute.
Right.
You stole my horse and I was going to go get my gun, he'd intervene and we'd go to court.
Right.
Then we urbanized and we had judges, and the law officers were policemen. And we know that police, to police an area means to keep it safe and to keep it clean.
Right.
Okay. So now we have judges, and what do we call the law officers today?
Fascists?
Well, yet when we're being candid, we do, perhaps.
Right.
We call them law enforcement officers.
Right.
Now that's top-down law.
Okay.
It used to be that it took a citizen's complaint for anyone to be taken to court.
Right.
But now you look in the paper and it says the state of versus.
Yes. Yes.
It's no longer necessary for a citizen's complaint. And so over time, we have come to the point where Bush, Gonzalez, these people have no respect for law anymore because they are the law on the top. Instead of from the citizen up, from democracy up, it is now totalitarian from the top down.
I hear you.
Here's where we are, and it's time, I think, for the people to reassert citizens' power. Power to the people, we used to say.
Yeah, we did.
And it's time to say it again.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, Bob, and when the barricades go up, I'm sure you and I will be on the same firing line, okay?
No doubt.
Okay, Bob, take care. I appreciate you checking in, pal. That was good. That was good. That was Bob made some excellent, what am I looking for? Historical etchings. Truth? Who's next, Kathy? Rich is calling from Bunkerville, Nevada. Bunkerville?
There you go, buddy. Yeah, Rich here. I love your show. You got a great radio voice. Listen, about the Mitt Romney situation.
Yeah.
I live out in Bunkerville, Nevada, which is about 80 miles north of Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
And it's a rural community founded by the Levitts, the Hafens, and a couple other families back in the 1870s, right?
Yeah.
Well, now, Michael Levitt is the chairman or the whatever of Health and Human Services. He's a Mormon, right? Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and like you said before, he's a ordained priest in the Mormon, so he can't divide church and state, right?
Right.
Well, I'm living in the bed of Mormonism. I see the long sleeve shirts walking in Walmart, and my neighbors next door frown on me because I smoke cigarettes, and they're even taking me to court because my German Shepherd barks louder than any of the dogs in the neighborhood. Meanwhile, they have the neighbor across the street is 225 feet away. That's three quarters of a football field away.
Yeah.
It's bringing me to court because my German Shepherd's barking louder than their boxer. They can't stand it. I'm a Catholic. living in their area, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's insane. If you've read the Book of Mormon, my daughter is reading the Book of Mormon and several of other books pertaining to their occultism, because it is a cult. What church in America locks the door when the last person gets in? You have to have a card that you're a Mormon.
Wait a minute.
You're not getting in the church.
They lock the door when
they lock the door after the last person gets in. You know, I drive past the Mormon school in my town, and the kids are behind barbed wire fences. The kids can't get out behind the fences, right? They lock the kids in. They lock the church.
Hey, Rich. Rich, can you hold on a minute? I gotta pause here and take a break, but I want to hear more of what you got to say. And besides, I need to ask you, you're from New York, right? You're from New York, right?
Huh?
You're from New York.
I am actually a Brooklyn boy, transferred. you can tell the accent, right?
Yeah, you damn sure don't have a Nevada accent. We'll be back and talk to you. Stay there. Don't go away, Rich. This is NoVam Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Yeah, we got you, Pickles. All right, back to Rich in Bunkerville, Nevada. I got to ask you, why'd you move to Bunkerville, Nevada?
Well, you know, I lived in Vegas.
From Brooklyn. Yeah. What part of Brooklyn? Park Slope, right?
Coney Island, man.
Oh, Coney Island.
The old country.
Oi.
About a mile from Nathan's.
And why are you living in Bunkerville, Nevada?
Okay. I bought the house in 2004. But I moved to Las Vegas in 96 for the work. I'm a carpenter, right?
Okay.
Union carpenter. I had loved the area. I love the dry climate. I can't stand any more winters.
Right.
I'm 56, the same age as Sandra in Berkeley. We talked a little while ago.
Yeah,
I also lived in the Poconos, where Paul was calling from a few minutes ago, right? And I noticed the Cunnamans up there, and you know that word, right?
The what?
And these people would come, huh?
The what?
Cunnamans, you know, when you know, the mother and father, a sister and brother and all that, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And but getting to my point, the war that's going on now is all about religion. We know that. But the problem with the Mormons and the Christians is the Mormons feel that the Garden of Eden is in St. Louis, Missouri. And the Christians feel, And the Christians feel that it's, and know that it's in Jerusalem and actually in Iraq, right? That's where the Garden of Eden was, right? So when we see all the war going on in Iraq, they never show you the palm trees and the nice areas, because that's all where nothing is going on, because everybody's protecting that, right? But the bottom line is what the Mormons are trying to do is they're trying to bleed the beast, right? The
bleed
government
the
is
beast?
The beast.
Oh, the beast. Okay.
Yeah, the government is the beast, so they're trying to bleed the beast, right?
Yeah.
That's why Bush put $3,000 on every kid that you have in school. You can take them out of school and homeschool them.
Uh-huh.
Well, this neighbor across the street's got seven kids, so they're getting $21,000 a year to keep the kid at home, right?
Right.
But, I mean, you know, it's funny, but it's insane.
It is. But it is funny, even though it's insane. All right, now, wait a minute. Now, what are you telling me, Rich? Are you telling me there really was a Garden of Eden?
Could be.
Could be. Okay, well, that's a little bit different. I mean, you don't believe. You said you're Catholic, though, right?
Yeah. I was raised Roman Catholic. And when I got out of kindergarten, I realized that there is a real world out here.
Yeah.
I realized the world is, the earth is billions of years
old. You know, I don't know who it was that said it. It might have been Cardinal Richelieu or somebody who said, give me a child till he's five, I'll give you a Catholic for life.
Yeah.
Are you still a practicing Catholic, or are you what they call a lapsed Catholic?
No, yeah, I'm lapsed, yeah.
You're lapsed.
You know, I see the good in things, not in religion, you know. I see the good in people. What color they are, it doesn't matter to me. It's what they are as a person, you know.
Well, let me ask you one more thing, Rich, since you've been pretty open with me. What do people think of your accent there in Bunkerville, Nevada?
Well, I tell them I'm from Florida, and and they say, really?
You're telling me you're from Florida?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to screw with them, you know, because, you know, they're from anywhere but nowhere, you know what I mean?
Right.
And how when I ask them where they're from, well, they say, well, we're just Anglo-Saxons, you know. In other words, they're a breed of people, but not any type of people.
Right. And how big is Bunkerville?
All right, here's a number, all right?
Yeah.
Bunkerville is 45 square miles of land.
Yeah.
And 1,200 people live there.
Oh, my God.
All right,
God.
Now listen to this.
Yeah.
Staten Island is 65 square miles of land, and 550 people live there.
Right.
550,000 people live there.
So
you know, it's a lot of farmland around here. I smell cow shit every day of the week.
No, don't say that. Oh, Rich, don't. Oh, don't disconnect him. Oh, God. All right, Rich, everything was cool until you said the S word. I love you, Rich. Call back again. No, I got Rich going too much, and he used the S word. And I'm sorry, Rich. Honest to God, I don't know why the FCC says we can't use that word, because everybody uses it. But I'm sorry. Rich, I love you. I love you. I'd call in again. You crack me up. You crack me up. I think you're a great American. Call in again, Rich.
Obviously, he listens to Sirius.
Sirius Satellite Radio, yeah, well, they don't have computer service out there.
45 square miles and all the cows you can eat.
Right. Rich, we love you. You just can't say the S word. Except this is what I don't understand, Kathy. Everybody who's listening, we can, you know, we've got enough time. When somebody comes on this program and says something that is just not allowed, we've got plenty of time to dump it. And between Ian and us, it's just not going to get over the air. But everybody who listens online, they hear the whole shtick because they're not on delayed, whereas people listen on Sirius or on the radio stations are on delayed.
Well, good Christian Jesus people don't have internets.
Okay. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling... Wait a minute. Mike from Dover, Delaware, doesn't believe in global warming? Really?
Where do I start with you guys? Good Jesus people don't have the internet? Come on.
No, what is this? You don't believe in global warming, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that was my original deal, and I'll explain that in a second, but I can't even believe your callers.
Well, you know, global warming is not a religion, Mike. It's not whether you believe in it or not. Global warming doesn't give a damn what your attitude is about it. Global warming is going to eat your ass alive. You don't understand that, do you?
Listen, if first of all, the Earth goes through cycles.
Well, let me ask you. Oh, cycles, my ass. Do you believe Bush? Do you believe what he says? He says the globe is warming. Do you believe Bush? Or are you an enlightened Republican who believes he's a jerk?
No. Listen, I the Earth is warming. I'll go with you on that.
But yeah?
There's no way humans could cause that.
No way, huh?
No. I mean,
what is it? Cow farts? What's causing it? Oh, it's just cycles, right? Hey, Mike, are you aware that scientists have dug out ice core samples that show what the climate was millions of years ago, and there's never been anything like this? It began in the 1850s with the advent of the Industrial Revolution. Do you know what the Industrial Revolution was, Mike?
Yes, I do.
What was it?
Obviously, it was...
Mike, go ahead. What was the Industrial Revolution?
We, you know, emitted all kinds of awful, you know, plumes from factories and coal
mines. And that has nothing to do with global warming, right?
It has to do with acid rain, maybe, in the...
No. Acid rain is God punishing the bunnies and the fish.
I got to hand it to you. You are pretty funny. But,
What? So all the crap, the tons and tons of lead and sulfur and puke and rot and destruction that we've dumped into the atmosphere has nothing to do with global warming, right? These scientists are, all of them, crazier than loons. 29,000 studies of global warming are pointless. Right, Mike?
Listen, God...
All these scientists are crazy. They have some liberal hidden agenda. Right, Mike?
Yeah, anti-capitalism.
Anti-capitalism. Yeah! Hell yeah! That's what it is! All right. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. You have a great Easter, okay? Bye, Mike. Oh.
Those anti-capitalist scientists who don't want any government grant money, who don't need any cash, don't need funding.
I just, see, this is why I say it's pointless to even talk about this issue. It really is. Either the nations of the world, which is also an anachronistic idea, nations, we still have nations, oh my God, the nations of the world will either produce leadership that will confront and deal with on a critical level the issue of the fact that the issue of the planet heating up, or it won't. People like the caller, the last caller, and me are totally irrelevant to this issue. It doesn't matter a damn what he believes. It doesn't matter a damn what I believe. The science is there. It is irrefutable. It is happening. When his ass is boiling in a mud puddle someplace in his chintzy little town, he's going to still have his radio turned to Rush Limbaugh, who's going to say, "There is no global warming. It's Nancy Pelosi's liberal plot." My friend, it doesn't matter what you think. Okay? Your attitude or your conclusions about global warming are totally superfluous. They mean nothing.
Outside of 12 misty mountains, I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain.
All things and what they used to be not. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be.
10 before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who answered your calls and co-produced the program and did the engineering all this week and last week and the week before and the week before and the week before and the week before. Thanks, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. The militant moderators at MikeBeloy.com on the message board. Who else? Catherine Bay, who is our executive producer. And if you're in the Phoenix area, come by for the Big Nova M birthday bash Sunday, April 15th. If you're not, book an airline and come anyway. Love to meet you. You can meet me, Jeff Farias, Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, and a partridge in a pear tree. Go to Nova M Radio for tickets, or you can drop by the radio station between 9 and 5, 824 Washington, Phoenix. Hope to see you Sunday the 15th. 4 p.m. until we're all so drunk we don't know what the hell to do. Or something like that. Email from Dave. Hey, Mike, hearing you talk about your experience today, watching Molly dying eggs and feeling the uncontrollable urge to bawl, well, all I can say is that it's nice to know I'm in good company. But I think a lot of us who are going through the same thing feel the anger, the frustration, the sadness, the outrage, and downright contempt for the stupidity going on around us and feeling powerless to do anything about it. That was one of the reasons I picked up and moved my family to Mexico. 20 years of working in corporate media, feeling like a liar and enabler of fascism with the paychecks no longer pacifying the growing sense of self-loathing, prompted me to, at least for a short time, throw in the towel and regain my dignity. Before going completely insane, I decided it was time to finally work on the novel that has been torturing me for 14 years. I sold the house, liquidated my assets, and at last freed my soul from this gut-wrenching feeling that I am enabling the subtle corporate devouring of our cherished American values. There were too many days when I would endlessly rage about the insanity, the inanity of my fellow Americans. If I wasn't screaming, I was weeping. There were too many nights when I would lie awake wondering what became of my country and what future my two daughters would face. Moving to Mexico gave me a short break and a moment of optimism as I at last exorcised that demon that kept the story spinning around in my head. And when not working on the novel, I could channel my anger by doing a comprehensive study and posting of worldwide human rights conditions. It's a never-ending work in progress, but it is cathartic. But I see that the Democrats are just as lukewarm as I feared, and my beloved former industry is doing the dog pile on Nancy Pelosi, and the Democrats are just sitting there taking it and not fighting back. So the tears still come, but not as frequently. The anger ever permeates just below the surface, but I channel it into my project and editing while I watch the calendar pages fly, awaiting word from my agent's efforts on behalf of the novel. And I wonder, when I have to at last return to the United States, will I once again be caught up in too many sleepless nights filled with anger and frustration and tears in my eyes as I watch my daughters sleep, filled with dread about the America they will wake up to? Well, Dave in Michoacan, Mexico. Thanks, Dave. Oh, Nikki is calling from Napa, California. Hey, Nikki.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. I'm doing good. I'm out here in the beautiful wine country of California.
I love Napa, and California. I love it.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to say I love your show so much. I listen to it whenever I can.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on you, your comments about the Joe Klein article today.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to say, I agree with you completely about him being an elitist type writer. That, I mean, a lot of times when I read those writers, that type of writer's work, you have to have a dictionary sitting next to you practically to get through an article.
Right.
But I do think that any time somebody from the more mainstream comes over to our side, that it's helpful to all of us because it'll touch more people. Like, I love all of the radio shows, Randy Rhodes and you and Tom Hartman, but it's almost like you're preaching to the choir, I think, most of the time, except for idiots like the one that just called about the global warming and the guy that called last night about Rush Limbaugh. I love it so much when you tell those people off. But I do think it was a good article, and hopefully there's another whole segment that read Time magazine that maybe some will come around because of that.
Well, I think you're right, and I also think don't be surprised don't be surprised that a lot of right wingers listen to Hartman and listen to Randy and listen to this program and listen to Rachel and on the weekends listen to Peter Werbe out of Detroit and listen to Sam Cedar wherever he winds up.
Oh yeah, he's awesome.
People listen. Right-wingers listen. They're terrified of calling in because on most programs they know they're going to be gutted. Tom Hartman doesn't gut them the way I do, but he makes them look like fools. But they still listen because I tell you what's going on here, Nikki, right-wingers are freaking out. Their gods, small g, have all turned out to be fakes, phonies, and liars.
Mm-hmm.
They're lost in the wilderness. They don't want to spend 40 years there because 40 years from now, if we don't do something, the planet's going to be on fire. So they listen to liberal talk. They just won't admit it. They're listening, mm-hmm. and that's fine. That's okay. I don't mind.
It's good.
Yeah, it is good because they hear a point of view that the pig man Rush Limbaugh dare not speak, and all his little clones, including people like Sean Hannity, are terrified of talking about. But we do have Hartman and Rachel and Randy and Peter Werby and I and on and on and on. We have a vast, almost silent audience of right-wingers who sit there in the darkness, in my case, and sweat as they listen to this program.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there. Listen, Nikki, thank you. I'm glad you called in. Take
okay,
care.
Happy birthday to your Nova M radio station, and have a wonderful spring, you and your family. I appreciate you devoting your life to this cause.
Thanks, Nikki. Take care. We'll talk again. Thanks for everything this week, folks. I'll see you Monday night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.